Welcome. You are listening to The Creative Spark. My name is G. Brian Benson, and I'm an award-winning author, project coach, actor, TEDx speaker, creative, and four-time Ironman triathlete. I love to creatively inspire and be inspired. And with each episode, I will be talking of authors, athletes, entrepreneurs, artists, and actors sharing their journey of success and learning how to find the joy and peace of mind that comes with stepping into one's own skin and going beyond anything they might previously have thought possible. I hope that their stories and strategies provide insight, tools, and empowerment to step up your creative game and help you live your best life. So without further ado, let's get going. My guest this week is Erin Gavin, a Scottish actress, singer, and entrepreneur. As a child and teen actress, Erin had numerous roles in theater and in UK television series. After moving to Los Angeles, she's had roles in films, theater, and television. In 2014, Erin played for the first time the role of Marilyn Monroe in the stage play Marilyn, My Secret at the Maca Theater in Hollywood. Since then, she has played Marilyn at least five more times, including the recently released audio podcast, Marilyn Behind the Icon. In addition to being a celebrated actress, Erin is an incredibly accomplished entrepreneur. She created the Erin Gavin Agency, which has become one of the United Kingdom's leading providers of models, dancers, and film and television background artists. When Erin is not acting or cultivating business deals, she spends her time doing keynote speeches for the World Women's Summit Organization and entrepreneurial conventions in Silicon Valley. Erin recently signed a record deal with Certica Records, and her first track was released last October titled, I'm Through With Love. Welcome, Erin.
Welcome.
That's quite a bio.
Yeah, it's funny when you hear it back. I know, I was just thinking that song, I'm Through With Love, it was definitely appropriate at the time. Just as you were saying that, I was like, yep, that's my feel.
we'll backtrack to this in a sec, but I'm curious, where did you find that song? Did you write it? Did you hear it someplace else? And you say, I got to record this. Was it given to you?
No. What happened was Certica record label were introduced to me when I was playing Marilyn in the West End in London. And the reason being was because a lot of the songs were in the actual play that Marilyn sang. Not I'm Through With Love, actually, but a lot of the songs like Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, mm-hmm. I Want to Be Loved By You, and the audience just loved it, loved. So I was introduced to this record label and we had a discussion and I said, why has no one created a female version of Michael Bublé and took all these old songs from like the 50s and, you know, other eras and just did kind of similar to what Michael did, was put a little bit of a modern twist on it because everyone loves these songs. Mm. So they loved the idea and that's where it all fruitioned from and came around. So the album itself that we're working on right now is music from that era. And it is a dedication to artists of that era, female artists of that era, mm-hmm. Marilyn being one of them. So at the moment, there is a few songs that have came out already. We're doing a lot of singles, but one of them being, yes, I'm Through With Love. And when I picked that song at the time, I was like, oh, this is true to my heart right now. So that song was sung by Marilyn in the music Some Like It Hot, which just happens to be one of my all-time favorite movies. Yeah. And that's why I thought that's the one that's coming out first.
Nice. I love it. Well, speaking of Marilyn, so you just recently finished playing her in the audio podcast series, Marilyn Behind the Icon, that's now available. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I think I said it was the third time you have portrayed her prior to this, but I think it's probably sounds like it's been more than that. What has it been like to play her? Was it a bit scary knowing that so many people already had this idea about who she was and what she meant to them?
Yes.
Does it get easier?
you have to just put all that aside and just think, okay, because if you got in your head with that, you're always going to feel that you're not doing a good job, because there's always someone who's not going to agree with your choices as well as the director's choices, because everyone has a different view or persona of who Marilyn was.
Yeah.
So I, in my head, just decided that I'm going to do the best job that I can possibly do, given what the director is looking to achieve and what the script's narrative version of Marilyn is. So every single time I've played her, it's been slightly different. I did a lot of research, naturally, so I have my own view of who this person was.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, a lot, the common thread throughout everybody's opinion of Marilyn is what you see on screen and her, you know, little moves that are iconic. That remains throughout. But it's what goes deeper can slightly be different between some of her super fans and their thoughts. So you can't please everyone, but you just do the best you can.
No, that's good advice. I mean, yeah, because that would be scary, taking on the role of someone so iconic. You know, it's like Marilyn, Abraham Lincoln. I mean, you know, just like people that are almost mythical.
I know. It's definitely been a roller coaster ride, a very good one. I'm still on it. So I have really enjoyed playing her. She's a very colorful character, so you never get bored of playing Marilyn.
Mm-hmm.
Because she is so colorful in terms of her, everything from her on-screen persona to off-screen persona to what she went through, to her moods, to her relationships in life. And there's a lot to work with. So
yeah.
It's a dream, I think, for an actor. And people, you know, have said to me, oh, you know, maybe you should play someone else. I said, well, I never get bored. You know, I don't get bored playing her. Of course, there's a fine line that you don't want to be, you know, typecasted or portrayed as a tribute, because that's what I'm not. So it's a fine line to what you want to say yes to, but, you know, you make it work.
Yeah. Well, what, like prior to, you know, portraying her the first time, did anybody ever kind of just in passing say, you know, you kind of remind me of Marilyn Monroe or anything like that? You know what I mean? The essence or I don't know, did that ever pop up, or was it just kind of like the first time that you went for it, you auditioned and it's like, okay, here I am. And it just grew from there.
I can't remember if anyone ever said that. Mm. It certainly didn't stick in my head if they did, but just when I went for the first casting initially, to be honest, I was ready to give up before that casting. I was ready to go back to Scotland because I'd been here for a few years at that point, and I had a lot of like really close good bookings and big shows, and I just got a little bit disheartened at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was ready to go back. I felt like, okay, I've tried this, you know, I can pat myself on the back for that, but I think I'm ready to go back to, you know, at least London. Anyway, I thought, okay, let me go to this audition. It came in. I didn't actually know much about Marilyn at all, and I thought, well, there's a lot of American girls out there that look like Marilyn more than me, so, but you know, I'll chance it, I'll go for it anyway. Mm-hmm. What happened was, the night before, I got the script late, and I was thought, well, let me go get, you know, my usual hot chocolate of Earth Cafe, keep me going with this script. And unfortunately, when I went to Earth Cafe, I was crossing the street and a drunk driver hit me. And And unfortunately, I fractured my hip and really I had concussion. I ended up in Cedars for and ended up, sort of bedridden for a few weeks.
Wow.
And so I missed the casting, actually. But what then happened was I decided, I really did hit rock bottom at that point, but there was still that little like determination inside me. Let me just find out if they found their Marilyn. And so I did email the director and I apologized that I couldn't make it and what happened to me. And she said, well, I would still love to audition you. So put yourself on tape singing Happy Birthday, Mr. President. So I did. And she said, okay, as soon as you're, when can you come in? When do you think you could come in? So I went in a couple of weeks later. And the actor that they'd already casted playing Bobby Kennedy was there. And we did scenes together. I did scenes on my own. I was there for a while, actually. And then as soon as I finished, she just said, you got the part. And it was just
Wow.
like music to my ears because I really needed that break, I really, really did. And so I thank Annalise Nanina, her name was, she was the one that casted me. So I'm very thankful for that. And she put me on that, this train ride to play in Maryland. And it's been a lot of fun. I mean, really has. So all I could say to other actors out there is I understand when you feel like, right, that's it. That's it. I've had enough. I'm going home. But just all I would say is just maybe just don't give up so easy. Not easy. It's we never really give up easy as actors, but maybe just give it wee extra pushes. And even if you feel like you have to go home, just don't give up completely. Because you just never know. You never, never know. So.
One's life can change just with a phone call. I mean, it's crazy out here, right?
Yeah, it really can. Your life can just change with one audition. And out of Maryland has came, thank you, Maryland, a lot in terms of like I've done plays, audiobooks, film documentary, clothing lines, and podcast now, which is still ongoing. We're now I guess it's the equivalent to season two, but it's not season two, it's just continued. Well, I'd like to play her one more time in a film or a TV series, and then I may have to hang my boots up because she did die at 36, and there's only so many years you can play Marilyn for,
That's so interesting. Yeah, I
Not
mean,
that I'm
she
old at all,
no, but I mean, it's
but
just like, yeah, those celebrities that die at a young age, I mean, they're kind of like ever young.
yeah,
It's very interesting how that works.
she's there. She'll. I mean, she's iconic around the world in terms of not just for who she was as a human being, but also the conspiracy behind her death. So her legacy and iconic figure will probably outlive us, which is a crazy thought, but it's true.
I listened to the first two episodes of the podcast and I really enjoyed it. It reminded me a lot of, I love old radio theater, and it kind of reminded me of that because there's oh gosh, just it's not just all you and the character. They'll discuss a little bit about what was going on, and maybe, you know what I mean? So it kind of goes back and forth between the narrator
Yeah.
and the character. And so that was really cool.
Yes, it's exactly that. It's like going back in time to when you used to listen to the stories on the radio.
Do you feel like, I mean, I probably already know the answer. Do you feel like Marilyn has become a part of you? I mean, since you played her so many times.
I think when you play someone who is once alive, you have to embody who they were and just sort of breathe into who they were, and in order to do the best job that you can. I feel that I've got a lot of similarities to her, so I didn't think that before. But now that I've obviously been playing her for a long time, I understand more so why I've been casted as her.
What are some of the similarities?
Well, one of the things that Onalise, who was the director of the initial play that I did, she said that I have the same vulnerability as Marilyn.
Mm.
And that was one of the things that stood out for her. Also for Onalise, she thought that I resembled her a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see that myself. But so everybody has a different, and then when I'm on stage, stage is where my heart is truly, because it's raw and it's real, and the audience is in front of you, and it's probably one of the most judgmental things you'll do to your character, your personal character, who you are to the core, because you really are putting yourself out there and to be judged.
Yeah.
But when it goes well, it's the best feeling in the world.
I did one play, and I know what you mean, and you know, and I've done a lot, but it's equally part terrifying as well as very fulfilling, and it's just like a high you'll never have again, right? I mean, it's just such an incredible,
it's an incredible high.
Yeah.
When you see, you know, when the moments when you know that the amount of work that I dedicated myself to the character, well, I do anyway, but especially Marilyn, because I'm playing someone who is once alive, so I can't F this up.
You're right.
So yeah. I need to get this right. And I felt that when I saw audiences like in New York and London and Edinburgh and LA and everywhere, given standing ovations that didn't know me from Adam, that's when I knew I did my job well, because it's not about me, it's nothing to do with me at the end of the day. Like, my job is to make the audience feel, and they don't even see me, they see Marilyn. And so when you get that standing ovation, and it's a room full of people, and you see the tears, you see every emotion, you cannot describe that feeling. It's just amazing.
That's awesome.
So I would definitely recommend that if there's any actors out there who do just TV and film, to just go to a local theater, even if it's a black box theater, and try it. Because I feel like real raw theater, you become a better actor. You learn fast, you learn hard, because there's no second take.
Right. No, that's great advice. I'm really glad that I had the experience that I did as well. And yeah.
Good.
So you were having quite a bit of success in the UK. What prompted you to come to LA? Was it scary?
No, weirdly. I'm lucky in the fact that from that point of view, to move somewhere halfway across the world I don't have any fear for that. Mm-hmm. And I also don't have any fear to try different things. So I know that a lot of people have this mindset that they want to do something and be the best at it, so they stick to maybe just doing one thing their entire life. And I understand completely, but I'm not that person. My makeup is more, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to give it my best shot. And once I know I can do it, I don't necessarily have to have the fame and the money out of it. I just know in my heart that I can do it, and I could be really great at it, or I will be great at it, or I am great at it, and then I can move on to the next thing. But for me, it's more about learning new skills and learning new things, and I'm able to say, actually, I don't like this, and sort of put it aside, mm-hmm. instead of carrying on just to be the best, even though you hate it. That's my makeup. So the change to move somewhere across the world made complete sense to me. You know, another change, another challenge, another new thing to do, and therefore it was sort of second nature for me, and I really enjoyed the process.
How old were you when you came over?
Ooh, I was young. I was in my 20s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you think that LA is similar to where you're from, or has aspects of it, especially the UK, because naturally we have the same language, we watch the same TV shows, mm-hmm. so we think we know the culture, but I don't think you really do until you live it.
Yeah, there's a lot of differences.
There's a lot of differences, especially in LA. You need to live it to really know it, and you need to live it for a while. And I definitely have naivety, you know, but I want to keep that to a certain extent. But you learn lessons, some you learn the hard way, especially when you come here. There is such a thing called the casting couch.
Yeah,
it does exist. It's not some made up thing. Obviously the world is changing, thankfully,
mm-hmm.
and it's not so much like that now, but it certainly was when I moved here. So I definitely said no to a lot of things that could have changed my career, but my morals just would not let me go down that route.
What were some of the other obstacles that you found when you got here?
Let me see. Not that many.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess I didn't really see them as obstacles, more so challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh gosh, I really, truly worked hard, and I can say that, and, you know, not in a big head way, but like, mm-hmm. I really, really did. Like, I look at this, there's a few books that I kept, and it had all these agents and directors, and I would contact them, and I really, really worked hard at it to build the right relationships, you know, that you have to do here in terms of getting yourself an agent and a manager and publicist, and getting to know who's making what, casting directors. There's a lot of work to do. I mean, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, you have to treat it like a business. I've enjoyed it. I really have enjoyed it. You know, people say, oh, well, what do you want to get out of acting? And I guess for me, it's the fulfillment, isn't it? You probably feel the same.
Mm-hmm.
But you enjoy doing a job and you get paid for it. How nice mm-hmm. is that? But you also want to play characters that you want to play, do projects you want to do. So it's always nice if you can find yourself another job mm-hmm. where you can make the right choices and not just choose projects just because you need a paycheck. And also, I think a lot of people come here and they maybe do it for the wrong reasons. So, like, I learned quite quickly that when I came here, that my love for stage was bigger than it was for television and film. But that's lucky for me, because I don't want to be famous. So, I mean, yeah, okay, it comes with the territory depending mm-hmm. on what you do, but naturally with stage, you know, you're not going to be the next Kim Kardashian famous, if you know what I mean. So I was quite happy about that. I thought, yeah, I'm quite happy in my stage world and I do the odd TV show and the odd film that makes sense, sure, I would love to do that. But I think if people come here hungry with fame in mind and they become an actor for that reason, then they're in the wrong industry. Find something else to do.
What? So I know you've had a lot of training in both New York and in the UK. Did you... What are some of the most, well, a couple of things. What are some of the most helpful things that you learned that you were able to kind of take into the business with you? And did you find yourself maybe a little bit more trained than some of the folks that you, I don't know. I mean, Americans, I don't think are quite as trained as the Brits and the Scots and such, you know what I mean? Don't have the background.
I was very fortunate when I was a kid that I was in a lot of theater groups from the age of six. So that set me up for, I guess, for this industry and for acting. So I was in two theater groups and I was also in a school, secondary school. I don't know what you guys call secondary school, but I was in a secondary school that had a really, like, the number one drama department in Scotland. Mm. I was lucky, because so I had already really good training before I even moved on. And my secondary school, my teacher was called Mr. Black. And I still see him today. But he taught me a lot, actually, because he would teach you the right from wrong. So he would, if you did something wrong, he would tell you. And I know that sounds obvious, but it's not. A lot of teachers don't tell you. Mm. They say, no, there's no such thing as the wrong way. Yeah, no, there is. If you're not believable, you need to change up. It's the wrong way. It's not working. So he set me up. I would say he taught me the best lessons. And I did go on. Then I went to college and then I went to the Royal Academy for a bit. And then I went and did courses in London. So I did continue to study. And then when I was playing Merlin, I had an acting coach called Michael Carm. And Michael, he's old school, and I loved that he once played on Broadway. He was a Broadway actor, so he knew the theater realm. He knew what I had to do, what I had to achieve, and also he once played Arthur Miller's son on Broadway. Arthur Miller's sister was an actress, mm-hmm. and he played her son on Broadway for years. So there was a strange connection between us. So he helped me a lot to develop Merlin, as well as everybody I've worked with, the directors, but the first director, Annalise, she really helped me because she was the first director to navigate me to play Merlin. Mm-hmm. And Sandro Minetti as well, he was great. So this been, I mean, everybody I've been working with has been great. Honestly, I've been very lucky.
Mm, that's awesome. What are some of the first things you do when you book a role? And it doesn't have to be Marilyn or, you know, whatever. Just
Weirdly, I just booked a film and I got the script. I haven't signed the contract yet. I'm just figuring everything out. Mm-hmm. I got the script. And so I guess I can tell you about that. Every way is different. But this particular time, I've got the script, I'm learning it. And my way of learning right now is just read through it, grasp the story. And as I'm grasping the story, I'm grasping the character. And I'm building the character in my head, like what she looks like, where she's from, what's her background. And I'm building and building. And I get a little book. And the book is only for this project. And I start building the character. Mm-hmm. So that, therefore, like, where's she from in Belfast? Like, where's her mother and father from? Where's What's her hobbies gonna be? What is where she go to school? Everything, because it helps you really truly build a person, you know, a character, proper character. And also I record myself on audio, and when I'm, you know, maybe in the car or whatever, I just play it back because the lines will go into my head, you know, the subconscious.
Very smart.
So that's what I'm starting. That's where I'm at right now.
Well, congratulations. Nice. That'll be really cool. Can you tell us what it's called or anything more about
it? I'm not signed the contract yet, so okay. I don't want to say. Yep. But I'll tell you later. Okay.
Perfect. What advice would you have for any upcoming actors?
Up-and-coming actors?
Or just people that are just, you know, curious about becoming one, exploring, you know, the possibilities, just some initial things to kind of maybe, you know, do.
Okay. Training is number one. Don't go and do a class. It's not credible. If you don't have the opportunity to go to college, or you don't have the opportunity to go to university, but you can maybe afford a decent class, then take that opportunity and do something. Just get some form of training under your belt, and then put yourself out there and just go for auditions to learn what it's like, whether you're right for the part or not. Just build that momentum of being in front of a casting director and knowing what that feels like and the energy in the room, do's and don'ts. Treat it like a business. So you are going to have a little piggy bank, shall we say, to invest in your business. So that's everything from your headshots, your reel, your workshops you're going to do, to getting on the phone and reaching out to casting directors or whatever form they want you to contact them in. Maybe you have to get your little postcards made up to send out to casting directors. If you can, you know, obviously work on getting an agent as quickly as you can, and just give it a shot. What have you got to lose? Have no fear. Have no fear. You only live in this body once. That's a guarantee.
What does being creative mean to you?
Well, that's changed over the years. And I think we do evolve, or we should evolve. Being creative. So for me, I love, like I mentioned before, I don't put my eggs into one basket. Understand that that's people's makeup and that's totally fine, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. It's great, but it's just not my makeup. So my makeup is sort of like, I like to try different things. I want to see if I'm good at it, or I could be great at it, or if I like it. I just like to try different things. So that's why being creative is in everything. So I have two businesses, and the creativity in them is developing them and watching them flourish into bigger and better. But there's creative energy in that. So that's one aspect. And of course, acting, and even the music. The music was something new for me, and it was an opportunity that I was not going to, you know, I was definitely going to do it. I don't need to be the next Adele, but I definitely really enjoy the process and putting songs out there and creating a whole persona and creating something that other people can enjoy. That's really why we do it. That you see people, it's not about us. Again, yes, we want to get the enjoyment out of it, but it's about seeing other enjoy what you're doing. That's the kick.
Yeah.
So I also enjoy art. I also enjoy making film. So like I don't really enjoy the production side of it. I've produced before. But I've tried it. I like certain aspects of producing, but certain parts of it I don't. I just directed my first documentary. And I love that, the process of it. I learned so much so fast.
What's it called?
So it's called The Bridgeton Boy. I'm working on it right now. It's not out yet. But you'll see it on IMDb. And you ever just get where you are in the right time at the right, you know, you have that feeling inside you where you are in the right place at the right time. That's what happened with directing this documentary. I knew I was supposed to do it.
Nice.
I had that feeling.
Yeah.
And it was learning a new skill. Would I direct again? Yeah, probably. But I don't need to be the next, you know.
Steven Spielberg or exactly. Jane Campion or.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
But I certainly get an enjoyment out of it. And I got to work with some amazing individuals. Like you'll see in the documentary, we've got some fabulous, iconic musicians, artists on it. And it's about a musician. And it's really a bit similar to what you're doing with your podcast. It's an inspirational piece. I wanted to do it, and I'm so happy I did.
Awesome. Well, I can't. Do you have an idea when it's going to be being released?
So what happens is a lot of people will know the process of how this goes. There's different ways, but for this particular piece that we're working on, once it's fully edited and I'm happy with it, we then bring on an agent to sell it. Okay. And then it's sold to whatever gives us the best, you know, deal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the process. So it could be another while. I mean, I'm not in any hurry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not up against a deadline or anything. But again, like, is this the process of it? It's so fascinating. I love it. I love hearing other people's stories. I really, truly do. I think that for me, I didn't grow up with, you know, I didn't grow up with a lot of, millions of dollars in the bank or anything like that. So I did build everything, you know, on my own from scratch. So I believe that anything is possible.
Absolutely. What? So as far as you becoming an entrepreneur, was that just like, did it just kind of happen as you just stretched yourself in different ways and all of a sudden things kind of started to click and say, hey, I want to maybe explore this? Or did you have a role model that you saw that you say, I want to do that too?
It's sheer determination. I mean, really, like sheer determination and having a set of balls on me. I had no fear. I still don't have a lot of fear. I have fear, of course, in some aspects of my life. But I don't have, when I saw like a window and I thought I could do this, all right, I know nothing about this, but bugger it, you know, I'm going to learn fast. I'm going to just do it anyway. What's the worst that can happen? I fail. Who cares?
Right.
You know? And so I took a lot of chances. I really did.
How long has your agency been going?
If I tell you that, I'm giving away my age, so I ain't going to tell you that.
Okay. You don't have to.
I'm joking.
I know.
I'm kidding. No, I've had it for over a decade.
Wow, that's really impressive. Did you, being an actress and kind of being in the business, you know, from an early age, did you take some of that knowledge from kind of watching how business operated and maybe some of your experiences? Did that help you create your the agency a little bit? Or
I was so young when I started that agency. I mean, I knew nothing about business. Mm-hmm. I knew nothing about anything. I just was like, okay, I'm going to learn this real fast. And if I make mistakes, it's fine. I'm learning and I'll fix it. I didn't have any money to set up the business or anything like that. It was literally, I had a potential of getting my first client and I just said yes. And then I just learned as I went, what was an LLC? What was this? What a business bank account? I mean, literally I just learned in the seat of my pants, but,
I love it.
I think you need to take fear out of it. You know, mm-hmm. What if you fail? Who cares? What's going to happen? Nothing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, there's times where I'm like, oops, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Oops, you know, I would have done that differently. But that's how you learn.
Right.
So, so I would say that when I was younger, I just went for things. Like, I knew there wasn't a plan B for me. This was what I had to do. You know, I wasn't the type of person that was going to go work in a shop 9 to 5 or anything like that.
Yeah.
I knew it wasn't going to be me. It wasn't who I was as a person. And I may fail many times in life, but you may be successful many times in life too.
Yeah.
You just have to take those risks.
Definitely. No, this is great. I totally agree. This is great. Where do you see yourself in 15 years?
15 years.
Do you have like a map laid out kind of on how you think want things unfold, or you just let them unfold?
I used to do that actually. I always set myself goals every year, mm-hmm. of what I want to achieve. And I keep them at quite a high standard so that if I meet them at the end of the year, you know, I've got a big smile on my face. Only me might know this, but like, you know, it doesn't matter. That's all that matters. That you know you know inside that yes I did that. So I don't have a long-term plan, but I do have ideas, and they may fruition to other ideas further down the line, but I certainly have ideas. I've done a lot of what I actually already wanted to do. Really, I've done a lot of what I wanted to do. Like I say, I don't have to be the best at everything. I just want to know in my head that, okay, I learned that skill, and I know that in my head that I can be really good at it, or I'm good at it, or I'm great at it. I don't need to be famous for it. I don't need to have $1 million in the bank to pat myself on the back for it. And so I've learned that about myself, that I'm content and happy with my process and how I work. So it's my way, I guess, is not for everyone. but I just think put yourself out there and try different things. Like, what's the worst that can happen? Well, there's no one else to prove to but yourself.
Yeah.
So if you're out there in the acting world to seek validation from everybody else but yourself, then that could really damage your soul, you know, because really to seek validation from everybody else, and that is what makes you happy, then you're never really going to be that happy, are you?
No.
So I feel like if you can look inside and think, right, I know what I want to do. I'm going to achieve that. And then if I want to continue it because I love it, then great, you know? Mm-hmm. And then there's certain things that you may aspire to do and really want to be the best at. That's okay. you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just if you're doing it for the right reasons.
So you're obviously creative in so many different ways. Is there anything that I missed?
Well, one lesson that my mother, or one lesson, should I say, one thing my mother got me into when I was, I think I was like 6 years old, was martial arts.
Oh.
And it's a different kind of creativity, but it also taught me a lot of discipline. And confidence, and instilled confidence. And I still do it to this day. And I think that if I was to say to any parent, I would say, if you don't know what to put your kid into and you want to instill discipline and some form of creativity, that would be one of the recommendations I would definitely make. One other thing I did do, which I have to say, I didn't really get that much enjoyment out of it, but I've done a lot of keynote speeches, and where I did get enjoyment out of doing the keynotes was meeting other people and finding out about other people. Was just, that was a wonderful experience, but being on stage and being me was a different experience. And not one that I was fully comfortable with. You know, I was and I wasn't, because it was like talking about yourself to, you know, a room full of people, rather than being on stage as somebody else in a room full of people. So I didn't mind it, but it just wasn't my favorite thing to do. But one experience that I did have, which was amazing, was I got to speak in front of 3,000 people at the world's largest entrepreneur convention in Silicon Valley.
Wow.
And I also spoke at Stanford, which I guess, like, you know, it's definitely something that a huge box that I can tick.
Right? It's probably not something that was on the radar when you were 10 years old.
I know. So again, you know, it's fine. You find things, you find creativity in all sorts of different ways. But I say that doing keynotes or speeches, it's good, but it's not something that's what I want to only do ever.
Yeah. So with all that you're doing, how do you stay in balance? Obviously, the martial arts probably helps.
Well, you concentrate. You just, it's time management, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Time management is everything. And you concentrate on what's important. So if I decide to do this film, for example, next week, right through to the day we start production, I'm dedicated to that project. And I make sure that I plan all the other activities that are in my life, like, for example, the agency. Luckily, like, I've got a good team over there. And so I dedicate my input over to them, because I know that I need a clear head and I need to concentrate on this character and learn the script. Mm-hmm. So you just manage your time. And then we've got another song coming out shortly, and we're working on the music. So again, so there are two things that I know, okay, for the next 6 weeks, this is what I need to work on. And you just make sure that that's what you do.
Erin, thank you so much. This has been fascinating on so many different levels. Now, you've got a lot of stuff happening and coming out. You've got the album being worked on, but you've got the single out now, and you've got the show Behind the Icon, the podcast that's out. And people can learn about these on your website?
Well, Behind the Icon is actually on most podcast platforms, if not all, but it's also available at behindtheicon.com. And the music is on all platforms, iTunes, Spotify, and it's just under my name. And what else? And then the documentary, that will probably come out in 22 or 23, because we're still working on that at the moment. And yeah, it's all fun and games.
Awesome. Yes, it is. And I'll put all of your website and your links and everything in the show notes so people can visit those and learn more Perfect. About what you're doing. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh my God. No, thank you.
It's a pleasure. You.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll do it again sometime. And we'll talk about the documentary.
Okay. Sounds good. Sounds good to me. Yeah. Perfect.
Thank you for listening to The Creative Spark. To learn more about host G. Brian Benson, his latest best-selling book, Habits for Success, and this week's amazing guest, please visit the show notes. And we love building community, making new friends, and spreading the goodness. So don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends and family. Till next time, as Brian always says, be well, be creative, and always be yourself.